Hello, this is Dr. Michael Lalage, Medical Director and Chief of Staff for Kaiser Permanente San Diego. For more than 50 years, San Diegans have entrusted their health care to us. Our care and coverage connect to provide medical care tailored to each member. With our integrated network of primary and specialty care, we work together using evidence-based medicine to help deliver positive results. We believe in a healthy and engaged life with good beginnings and dignified endings. We believe that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness requires total health, including equal access to high-quality, affordable health care. At Kaiser Permanente, our cause is health. Our passion is service. We work to help make lives better. To learn more, visit kp.org/San Diego.
It's time for KPBS Midday Edition. Today's show is all about free speech and what that looks like under the Trump administration. I'm Jade Hindman with conversations that keep you informed, inspired, and make you think. We'll speak with a political and constitutional scholar to talk about our First Amendment rights and government influence. Then we'll continue our conversation with local comedians to find out how recent efforts to censor comedic political commentary are impacting their work. That's ahead on Midday Edition. Free speech is dominating the headlines right now. Last week, ABC announced it would indefinitely suspend late-night host Jimmy Kimmel after he commented on Charlie Kirk's killing. This came shortly after FCC Chairman Brendan Carr said publicly, quote, "We can do this the easy way or the hard way," end quote. The move also comes after Trump reached million-dollar settlements from ABC and CBS over coverage, and Congress has stripped federal funding from NPR and PBS. Leaders and scholars are sounding the alarms about our right to free speech and freedom of the press, and many fear this could signal a new era of political censorship. Joining me to make sense of this is Eric Epps. He's a professor of political science at Imperial Valley College. Rick, sorry about that. Welcome to you.
Very cool. Thank you. Nice to be here.
Glad to have you. Also, David Loy is here with us. He's the legal director with the First Amendment Coalition in San Diego. David, it's great to have you joining us as well.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Great to have you. David, I'll start with you. You know, what kind of precedent does the decision to pull Jimmy Kimmel off the air set for broadcasters at the national and local levels?
What the FCC chairman did here is essentially censorship by shakedown, by going public and saying we can do this the easy way or the hard way. That is censorship by any other name. And if you don't believe me, you can ask Senator Ted Cruz, who said the same thing.
You know, and for anyone who doesn't know what Kimmel actually said, we do have a clip that I'd like to go ahead and play now.
We hit some new lows over the weekend with the MAGA gang desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them and doing everything they can to score political points from it.
Yeah. And so in response to that, FCC Chairman Carr actually went on a podcast and again said, you know, we can do this the easy way or the hard way, and really pressured these companies and networks to get rid of the Jimmy Kimmel show. So, Rick, you heard that. What do you make of all this?
Well, it was deeply disturbing on many levels. Jimmy Kimmel, as well as many of others, have spoken candidly about, the presidency or the foibles of heavy-handed politics, whatever the issues may be. And this goes back for centuries of criticism. And so it's nothing unusual about people speaking out against issues that they find to be relevant or counter to what one political party may see. However, this is, and one of the first times that we have seen a heavy-handed reproach, if you would, of an individual who, when you listen to the rhetoric, said nothing inflammatory, as far as I am concerned. Some people have said it's in poor taste, right? They say, oh, the timing of it's not good. But it's rare the case that you find that that timing has any element of this. In fact, Jimmy Kimmel himself had said that it was horrible about what happened. He really was very, affable to, and respectful of the shooting and what happened to this individual. But he also made a very straightforward comment that the MAGA group was using it to, push their agenda. And I think the evidence is readily available that that's what's happening, and it's happening more and more under this administration. It's very disturbing.
Hmm. David, media companies Nexstar and Sinclair both own a range of ABC affiliates and were the first to come out and decide to nix Jimmy Kimmel's show indefinitely. Right now, Nexstar is seeking FCC approval for a merger with Tegna. If that goes through, the company would own three TV stations in the San Diego market. In what ways do you see mergers like this making it easier for the government to influence what airs or what's written?
There's a couple of different issues there, and I'll take them one at a time. First, separate and apart from what the government does or does not do, concentration in media ownership can present problems to the extent that one company controls multiple platforms from which the public can acquire news and information. That's not a question of governmental censorship. That's a question of concentration of ownership, which can be a potential problem. Related to that, however, is the second point, which is that to the extent the government has leverage over whether to approve a certain merger, that creates an obvious incentive for the companies seeking approval to curry favor with the government. And this administration has made abundantly clear that it will exercise that leverage, not for legitimate business or regulatory reasons, but to censor and discourage speech that it dislikes and to favor and encourage speech that it approves and likes. And that is a censorship problem. The government should never be putting its thumb on the scale of what is the right or the wrong thing to say in the media. Now, take Jimmy Kimmel's comment as an example. Some people might find it extremely offensive and inflammatory. Some people might find it entirely appropriate. That is for people in civil society to judge and decide for themselves. And if people want to boycott the station, or if people want to pull that show, or companies, affiliates want to pull that show from their programming, that's their decision, as long as the government is not putting its thumb on the scale. And this administration has been made no secret. It's been open and notorious and transparent that it will retaliate against critics. It will retaliate against anyone who opposes this regime. That is not democracy. That is authoritarianism waiting to happen. And I'm very, very concerned. And this transcends politics, whether you agree with Jimmy Kimmel or not, whether you agree with Trump or Brendan Carr or anybody else. And there are people on the right who have quite correctly called this out as a threat to freedom of speech. More, they may say, I completely disagree with what Jimmy Kimmel said, but the government should not be threatening to retaliate against the station or against the network, because that violates fundamental rules of freedom of speech, and that will blow back on us if the other side gets in power. That is, I deeply respect those on the right who have called this out as censorship in waiting.
Hmm. Rick, what do these media mergers say for you?
Yeah, I agree with David. I think this is sort of interesting time because we, and many of us know that historically that news and integrity of the news was really important back in the days, right? That in fact, if you looked at CBS, ABC, or NBC going back 40, 50 years ago, it really was about, it wasn't about picking one side or the other. It's about trying to provide information to the public so the public can make it be educated, well-versed on these issues. And now with all the polarization and those who are being put forward even to sell this information, very few of them are, political scientists like myself, versed in this field, or like David, a constitutionalist, right? They go get people who have, a communication studies major, but has a million followers, and they say, "What do you think?" Give you a microphone, and then whatever they say, no matter their limited knowledge, that becomes truth instead of the people who really are the experts in the field. And that's a really disconcerting aspect across the board. As far as the idea of the rise of authoritarianism, which is incredibly troubling, because when you can use, when you can take a playbook and silence those, silence dissent, which is the essence of democracy, is this, we'll be able to dissent free of risk of your being assaulted or maligned. That says volumes. And the fact that there's a part of the public that's been manipulated into standing, you know, very strongly against one side or the other, then they've been manipulated into thinking that that democracy doesn't is not for everyone. It's mm-hmm. only for certain groups of people who follow whatever that group that's in power actually suggests. And that's a very dangerous precedent.
Well, and speaking of that, David, I'm going to let you answer this last question here before we go to break and continue our conversation on the other side. But, you know, over the weekend, President Donald Trump told the crowd at Charlie Kirk's memorial that he hates his opponents and does not want the best for them. What do you make of that rhetoric?
It's one thing to say, I hate you. It's another thing to say, I hate you, but I will defend your right to disagree with me. Politics is ugly. Politics has always been ugly. But underlying politics, there needs to be a fundamental commitment to rule of law and a fundamental commitment to freedom of speech as the oxygen of civil society. So I'm most troubled by not just the fact that there's polarization. We've had deep polarization in this country at different times. But what's most frightening to me is the apparent complete disregard and disrespect from this administration of the fundamental right to freedom of speech, even for the people that we most disagree with.
Still to come, we continue our conversation on free speech on the other side of this break. KPBS Midday Edition is back in a bit.
Here in Southern California, we know all too well the devastation wildfires can cause. That's why our mission is to stop the next one before it starts. I'm Brian D'Agostino, leader of SDG&E's Wildfire and Climate Science team, and we've built one of the most advanced wildfire prevention programs in the country with a team of world-class meteorologists using artificial intelligence and real-time weather data, all to help keep our communities safe. We're also building a stronger grid and using public safety power shutoff when necessary, because believe me, I've seen firsthand how unpredictable wildfires can be. But here at SDG&E, we face that uncertainty head on to help keep you safe. Learn more at sdge.com/wildfire safety.
Welcome back to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. This hour, we're discussing the state of free speech following the latest out of the FCC and the possible local implications of that. I'm here with David Loy. He's legal director with the First Amendment Coalition in San Diego, and also Rick Epps, political science professor with Imperial Valley College. Rick, you know, before we went to break, you wanted to add to what David Loy said about rhetoric from the president and add some context through the lens of the Bill of Rights.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, of course, obviously the freedom of speech is one of the elements, primary elements of the Bill of Rights. But what I wanted to say was this, is that, you know, when we talk about the Bill of Rights, the Bill of Rights is created to protect us, the people, from the government, right? It was supposed to give us the sense of, it's actually the foundation of what holds democracy together, was letting the people know they had some rights to protect themselves. But as I will tell anyone, and I, as I tell my students, that your rights are subject to interpretation. So your view of what you think freedom of speech is, or the right to bear arms, or, you know, or the right to peacefully assemble, all those things that, that we sort of hold up as monikers of the Bill of Rights, along with, you know, all the various aspects of criminal elements that are part of that in terms of detainment. The reality is what you think it, to be very real, doesn't matter. What matters is the person who has power, what they interpret it to be. So the analogy I would use is like you're one person, and if somebody, you want to hold up your book and say, here, the Bill of Rights says this, that's great. But if the person who, if you were unlawfully detained by the police, for example, and you thought you could hold that book up, does it really matter at that moment? Or is a person who has power, is that one who matters? And the truth of the matter is, while your interpretation may feel good to you, what matters is the person who has power over you, that you're challenging what their interpretation is, because you're one individual and they are a collective. And frequently this is where things get messy, unless it goes to some sort of legal opinion that then draws us into this, our framework that supports, either supports or does not support the essence of things like free speech or freedom right to bear arms and those things. So in this case, you know, this is a challenge, direct challenge to the freedom of speech and being able to say what you need to say. And in democracy, it is, the freedom of speech is the pressure valve of democracy. And when you can't, and it's a litmus test, and if you can't have that right, or if it's being impeded by corporate, by strong arm, by the government, by corporations caving into the government, that is a huge slap to the face of democracy. And I think a lot of people, the general public, have bought into it and think that that's normal. And I think once you normalize it, that's when things start to really fall apart.
Mm. Well, David, that in mind, I'd like to talk about the wider implications of this for everyday people and employees. You know, people are losing their jobs due to social media posts about politics, and even less than that, Karen Atiyah with The Washington Post was just fired. And right here in San Diego, a Navy doctor was just removed from her leadership position after right-wing activists shared her screenshots of her LinkedIn account, which included her pronouns. What authority do employers have to fire workers based on their online activity?
Well, I have to give you the lawyer's answer, which is it depends. Mm-hmm. Because private entities are not governed by the First Amendment. You know, for First Amendment purposes, a private employer is free to take whatever action it wishes in response to an employee's speech. California does have certain statutes in its labor code that do restrict employers' right, private employers' right to, or some state and local employers' rights to fire people because of their speech and their political speech in some circumstances. The government is bound by the First Amendment, and the government generally should not be, you know, firing rank and file employees simply because of their viewpoint. Now, if you are the mayor's chief of staff and the chief of staff undermines the mayor's politics or policy, the mayor can say, I need a chief of staff who's loyal to me. So it's a bit of a sliding scale. But in essence, the government should not be terminating employees, you know, rank and file employees, simply because it does not like what they have to say. Now, the military is a little different. You know, the military has more leeway to crack down on speech of rank and file for understandable reasons. So every case depends on its facts. But as a general matter, you know, the First Amendment says the government should not usually be firing rank and file staff simply because it disagrees with their politics.
Mm-hmm. And
I was going to say real quickly, and I agree with David on this, but one of the things we've seen happen in this administration is just the wiping out of the federal bureaucracy, you know, and that's for, in fact, so David, what you just said, I think is the essence of what concerns me most, is that to come in and be able to unwind the federal bureaucracy or put people over part of the bureaucracy who have no experience whatsoever in those fields is terribly troubling. And I think that's one of the realities of fact that we're seeing happen, and particularly for the use of a pronoun or not use of a pronoun, that you think that if you're going to be removed, it'd be for something that was really, you know, ideologically problematic. But just because you put, you know, he, she, they, them, whatever you're using, that they take that and say that's a grounds for termination. Mm-hmm. That's mind numbing, really. It's,
yeah. You know. Absolutely. What do you think the implications are, though, for when government is able to pressure corporations? And then corporations capitulate by then getting rid of various employees for their freedom of speech.
Well, it's one of those moments that is sort of, you know, while not without precedent, what you find out is that these companies all have private, they're owned, but at the end of the day, they're owned by private private citizens who have their own political views, right? So even though there may be a body, you know, a board of directors or, you know, things like that that exist at the higher framework, they all have a political ideology that they utilize. And they, what they try to do is push their view of the world onto this, onto the, to the politics and policies. That's where the, that's where it gets messy. So all these companies have capitulated, you know, and I have to say I've been very disappointed that some of them did allow themselves to be strong-armed and manipulated. But it also reflects that there are entities within their organizations who share the same ideological premise that have allowed for this to happen. So some of it is of being fearful of the president, right? Fearful of the administration, which is frightening enough that you have to be fearful of the entity that's supposed to be leading us and guiding us. But the other side is that there are people within that house that are also, I would argue, just as guilty of capitulation.
Mm-hmm. David, what concerns do you have about self-censorship, both from mainstream media and everyday people?
The government should never be putting its thumb on the scale directly or indirectly. Government cannot do indirectly what it can't do directly. So the government should not be strong-arming private companies or private entities to censor their own staff. Some organizations and some media have stood up and refused to bend the knee, and I commend them. There are law firms that are fighting the administration, have fought censorship. There are universities that have stood up and fought censorship and retaliation. There are others that have capitulated and bent the knee. I wish more would stand up, because the best defense against an authoritarian takeover is a strong showing by civil society and a strong resistance. And again, this transcends politics. This should not be a matter of left, right, Democrat, Republican. This should be a matter of, we defend the fundamental right to freedom of speech for everyone. A principle is not a principle if it's not inconvenient sometimes. And I commend those who have stood up and continue to resist and fight back against this attack on the fundamental premise of freedom of speech, which again, I submit, is the oxygen of all civil society.
I was just going to say quickly, I think part of this also is really gets to a root of a bigger problem, which is the lack of teaching civic education. You know, when I came through, you know, junior high school way back in the day, they taught civics. Most of these kids now don't get taught anything until they get to be in college. So they have no sense of what it means, really, to operate and work within a democracy. So I tell my students frequently, two things. One, that freedom isn't free, and that democracy takes work. And if you're not going to participate, then you might as well put a crown on the guy's head and call him a king or call her a queen and call it a day. But it requires our participation. And the fact that there's such a huge level of a lack of knowledge of anything related to this other than what they see on social media, which can be incredibly divisive, then, you know, they just operate being manipulated, which, again, one of those core essences of power.
You know, here's a question, Rick, because you know the events of the day, they're not just happening in a silo. They're all connected. So when you look at the killing of Charlie Kirk and the government censorship or pressure that's happening now, even Donald Trump's desire to designate Antifa a terrorist organization, though Antifa is not an organization. All of that put together, what dots are you connecting here?
Well, I will say on the periphery of this is it's all based on really that Project 25 notebook, the framework, and I know we'll talk about that momentarily, but the idea of creating an institutional framework that is built on conservatism and institutionalized their ideology, their view of the world, and putting that into play in every aspect of government across the federal bureaucracy, the president, the office of the president, across every aspect of life. And, you know, it's interesting. The beauty of democracy is that it is diverse. It should be diverse. It should, you know, no matter whether if you're a religious person, that's great. But you know what? You have to acknowledge the people who are atheists or agnostic, right? You've got to be able to govern everyone. Just like when Obama was president, he couldn't just legislate for black people. He has to legislate for everybody, no matter his skin color. So the idea of what that really represents is that we see now this sort of very protracted view of trying to permanently institutionalize conservative rule over the country. And, you know, you can't shove a particular ideology down the throats of people. And then if people were to look at the hypocrisy of some of the things that for people who stand in these positions, it's even more frightening. And that's what, but our ignorance, our lack of knowing is our undoing. And the problem is because there's millions of bits of data out there. Where do you go to get the truth? And then they just marginalize it by saying, hey, you know, everything's fake news. You know, and that's really the damning part of that.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the 2025 playbook. Where are we at in the project at this point? Where does media censorship fit into that?
Well, the media censorship, and you know, in my estimation, is really, again, blocking off any type of left of center, anyone who challenges the ideologies of conservative rule. Are silenced, and including those who are comedians, those who kind of brought levity to it, as they always have, are being silenced, which had never really been the case before. They may try to silence political pundits, but rarely did they go after the comedians. Even President Johnson and others laughed at when they were being criticized by others. But this particular administration, when you make fun of them or joke about them, they have now made it very clear that there is a zero tolerance, and the fact that it's like they take a strong arm, like this weird sort of mafia style view of how they treat people, and we have taken it, and that's the problem. If we don't push back against government incursion, then they will just keep taking, and that's the scary part. They will take until we stop and say enough.
Yeah, David. Quickly before we go, I want to give you the final word here. What dots are you connecting?
This administration is openly and notoriously attacking the very pillars of rule of law and the very pillar, the very foundation of freedom of speech. And that is terrifying. This is qualitatively different from any administration I've seen in living memory. And all governments push the limits. All governments tend toward censorship at some level and should be resisted. This administration is different both in quality and degree. And that is terrifying. And I agree, you know, it is incumbent on all of us in civil society to resist this attack on the fundamental pillar of freedom of speech, regardless of your political position or your political party.
I've been speaking with David Loy, legal director with the First Amendment Coalition. David, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Also with us, Eric Epps, political science professor with Imperial Valley College. Rick, sorry about that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
Still to come, we hear from local comedians about how they're navigating their work in light of censorship of comedic political commentary. More after the break.
I'm Kinley Walsh-Lawler, President and CEO of Parks California. Across California, parks are places where nature and community come together. Through Arts in California Parks, artists and culture bearers are creating murals, performances, and cultural programs with local organizations that reflect community stories and deepen our connections to these landscapes. From music in neighborhood parks to murals that celebrate heritage, these projects remind us that parks are more than just open space. They're living galleries of creativity and belonging. Learn more at parkscalifornia.org/arts.
Welcome back to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. So this past hour, we've been talking about political censorship and the right to free speech in light of Jimmy Kimmel Live being taken off the air. Of course, that's just the most recent in a slew of actions. We can start back with Amber Ruffin, for example. Just today, the ACLU, though, came out with an open letter signed by 400 celebrities in support of Kimmel and condemning the suspension there. Today, we also want to look at what this could mean for comedy, not just on a national level, but also right here in San Diego. I'm joined live by two professional comedians local to San Diego. Walter Ford has been doing stand-up for a decade. He's also been on the show Netflix is a Joke. Walter, welcome to you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you. Thanks for having me.
Glad you're here. Also with us is Victor Paz. He's the founder and co-producer for Cackles, a local comedy company. Victor, it's good to have you here as well.
Thank you.
So this question is for both of you. It's been a little less than a week since Jimmy Kimmel's show was taken off the air. What are your initial reactions to the news? Walter, I'll start with you.
Initially, I honestly feel like for the first time in my life, I'm watching the government attempt to censor free speech, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was pretty shocking. It was pretty shocking. It made me also think about how local that actually can get here in the near future.
Yeah. Well, Victor, what are your thoughts?
I'm one of the few that probably always thought there was a version of censorship happening in the United States for the last few decades. I think this is the first time it's been so overtly done in the public eye. And I think that's the scarier part, that they flexed their muscles just out on broad, sitting on the, you know, lawn of the White House and like, hey. And I thought that was the scariest part for me, because it's like when they did it behind the scenes, you were kind of like, we know you're doing something, but mm-hmm. we don't see it. But when we see it, we're like, hey, like,
it's like,
you know,
it's in your face, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But also, since it's in your face, it almost like demands a response from you.
Correct.
Right. You can't act like, well, we're not sure this is what's happening.
No, yeah.
Because it's right here,
yeah.
right there.
They used to ironically have the integrity to lie to our face about it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how else to say it. Like, at least they kind of hid that they were liars. But like now it's like, no, you're just going to overtly say, no, you don't have the right to talk back to us. And this is the first time I think it's directly come pretty much from the president. And I think that's mm-hmm. the scariest part of it all.
Well, how have you both been responding to this, Walter? I mean, is this kind of changing the way you do your comedy sets or your approach?
Could I get that? Oh,
go ahead.
I was going to ask, could I get that question again? I kind of lost you a little bit there.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm just asking, you know, what has your response been to these recent moves? Does this at all change how you approach your comedy?
I wouldn't say it changes how I approach my comedy. It actually makes me speak even louder about my comedy.
That's a change.
I think right now, I think you said the best action is to understand that we're in a moment in time where we have to meet the moment. And right now, speak up even more than we were before.
Right. Victor?
And that's on stage and that's online as well.
Yeah. So I operate the way I operate my comedy is I'm more tongue in cheek in my humor and point out the absurdities, and I think I haven't really found a way to point out how absurd this is, to be honest with you, without feeling like I'm copying everybody else, and I like to always spin it on my head. I look at things from two perspectives. I also look at things from the perspective of a producer, because we produce about 11, 12 shows all around San Diego. And as a producer, I was concerned that some of the comedians might not have the grace to handle such a topic. We all can't be Jon Stewart, you know. We can't all handle such difficult situations so well. And so it's like I've looked at it two different ways. Like as a comedian, I'm like I want people to say however they want, whatever they want. But as a producer, I'm like, hey man, like I also gotta CYA some way. You know what I'm saying? I don't know how to quite put it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, how have people in the circles you run in the comedy industry? How, I mean, is there a consensus that free speech is being challenged? In fact.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I know me and Walter don't always run in the same circles. We know of each other, but we haven't really performed on shows together. But comedy is a small world. Either you have principles of free speech or you do not have principles of free speech. That's not right. That's not left. That's just either you're okay with the government intervening and stopping people from saying what they want. Well, you're not. Now, people will come up with all sorts of excuses and they'll say things like, well, Jimmy Kimmel was on the downslope. Oh, well, so was every other television show. They were all down 70%. But what they weren't saying is, but look where their views were on YouTube. Look where their views were on Instagram. Look where their views were on TikTok. They were picking up their views just the same. It was just on different media formats. And people aren't evolving with the times. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a comedian. Walter's a comedian. We both have to have social media, whether we like it or we hate it. They're important for our careers.
Yeah, that's something I hadn't even thought about. Walter, what do you think?
I think that the right now the consensus with everybody, we're all kind of saying the same thing. And kind of going back to my last point, where we need to find what powers or what collectively we can do to make sure that this doesn't come to our doorstep. I mean, a lot of people are pretty scared and nervous right now, you know, and I know people that are also in the media space that are even afraid to use social media the same in fear of losing money, in fear of losing deals, or in fear of having their platform silenced as well.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, as we're sitting here right now, we just got some breaking news and that Jimmy Kimmel Live will return to ABC on Tuesday after being benched by ABC Disney for Charlie Kirk comments. Reaction from both of you on that, Victor?
I think it kind of shows that the public still wields some power. I think that's, I mean, there was so many people that went and overall, I don't think I seen one comedian that was cool with canceling Jimmy Kimmel, and on the, whether they were right or left, whether they were in the Rogan sphere or not, and also I think the regular I am a regular person, I don't know why I'm saying it that way, but people that like had Disney and Hulu, and they were all canceling their stuff, saying, hey dude, we're gonna flex our muscles too, we can make a difference. And I mean, you have a whole bunch of people doing the same thing, and we all work in unison. It's amazing what we can accomplish in even 3-4 days.
Yeah. Walter, what do you think about that?
I think that it shows the power in solidarity. I mean, I could be misquoting, but I believe they lost about $3.1 billion of valuation in like a day, yep, or something like that. And so it just shows, because I'm also a person that canceled my Disney Plus immediately. So it shows that solidarity can push these platforms, no matter who they have to answer to.
Mm, yeah.
And I think we just we're experiencing that in real time.
There it is. Here's a doozy for you. you know, there were a lot of comedians in the scene who actively supported and advocate for President Trump, because they say they want to protect freedom of speech, especially in that move to remove Jimmy Kimmel from air. What do you make of that? I mean, do you think there should be some, you know, backlash from the comedy community in that case, Walter?
I believe there should be some sort of retribution to pay off, because this is... Just to make sure, can I get the beginning part of that question again?
Yeah.
I kind of lost you a little bit too.
Yeah, there are some comedians who sit on the other side of this and believe, yes, that the move to remove Jimmy Kimmel from air was in fact a move in the right direction for freedom of speech.
Oh yeah, no, I think those people are just doing the same thing that Disney was doing, and they're just placating to a certain base and placating to a certain person. You know, I mean, we all have opinions, but I think that there are certain people, and there are always going to be certain people that will just go along with whatever the status quo is. And I think those people were just saving face, mm-hmm, you know, in lieu to keep up their base or sell tickets or whatever, you know, mm-hmm, business they can get from that.
Yeah, because
that's insane.
Well, Victor, okay, what do you think about that? I mean, because at the end of the day, everybody's got an opinion, and I guess everybody has a right to their opinion.
I mean, I could say I'm athletic and 160 pounds all day. That don't make me athletic and 160 pounds. You guys ever see a picture of me? I'm closer to 300. So, I mean, I don't know how you could possibly say the government and the FCC commissioner saying, you know, a threat and a letter and – That's freedom of speech? Like, and mind you, I have a lot of nuance when it comes to free speech. I'm very similar to the gentleman that was on here earlier in that, like, there's a difference between the marketplace of ideas and them saying, hey, we don't want your ideas, we're not going to watch you, and we're not going to send you money, and freedom of speech, which is when the government comes in. I can say whatever I want, but if I'm insulting you and your audience is like, screw that guy, that's fair. That's fair. That's the marketplace of ideas saying my idea wasn't worth anything. Mm-hmm. So I think that once the government intervenes, that's my problem. When people say, hey, we don't want none of that, that's just the marketplace of ideas saying no. And I think people confuse freedom of speech and with cancel culture, and they're not the same thing to me.
Right. Well, yeah, no, not at all. And so anyway, yeah.
Sorry.
No, you're good. You're good. I was going to then go into and what exactly is cancel culture again, but that's another show.
Sorry about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you're good. You're good. Well, I mean, how would you characterize the comedy scene today, Walter? I mean, you've been doing stand-up for 10 years now. What's your take, and how have you seen it change over time?
I've definitely seen a change to be more focused on social media. That's kind of a lot of the business now. I will say also it's kind of moved and shifted to a more political stance just because of the environment that we're in. You know, people still do their little ha-ha, you know, jokey jokes, but it's definitely more in totality. A lot of people are speaking up on more political things, even if they aren't the most political type of person or have the most political type of comedy. And I think it's just from the changing landscape that we've seen in America in the last 10 years, you know, literally since 2025 or 2015.
Yeah.
The reason I think that's a good thing, because the entertainers are the soothsayers of history. Mm-hmm. So right now I think it's just a lot of people that are using their expression to get their point across and share information.
Right. Well, and Victor, I mean, comedy, you know, it has a long history of rocking the boat.
Yeah. I mean, comedians, I always say that we're the modern day jesters. Our job is to poke at the king. And if we're not allowed to poke at the king, then we're not allowed to do our job. I think that's why guys like Stephen Colbert, Jon Stewart, some of these guys have become so important in society. The Jimmy Kimmels and the Jimmy Fallons, but even back in the day, a lot of people, you know, Jay Leno and Carson and all the Letterman, all these guys had their moments where they also poked at whatever was in front of them at the time, because that's our job as jesters, is to set it straight. Be like, hey, dude, this is absurd. This is ridiculous. And we're supposed to let you know, and we're supposed to use entertainment in our comedic voice to tell it. Now, I'll be the first one to say that Walter is 10 years in and I'm only 3 years in. He's much more mastered of his craft than I am. But I've always been a big fan of comedy and political comedy, especially. I think we've become extraordinarily polarized and people don't even want to hear the other side. Even of a comedic standpoint, as a producer, I've heard somebody say, you had three people bashing Trump. And I was like, I don't even have too much political stuff on my stage. I have some stuff where people are making points about the absurdities of society. I don't consider that political. I just consider it honest. Mm-hmm. But some people are just associate one thing with politics. And I think that's a danger in itself, because now we're not even open to discussing things. And that's not even freedom of speech. That's just the society's saying, I don't even want to listen to you. We're talking at each other. We're not having a conversation anymore. And that was honestly one of my big issues with a lot of these online debaters. They're stuck on a hill and they're not having a conversation, yeah. Right? They're just kicking down the hill saying, no, I'm right. You're just going to have to listen to me till I prove it to my audience, not to the person they're actually having a conversation with.
One of the many consequences of, manipulating facts, right?
Correct.
Ultimately, what are your hopes for comedy? What needs to be done to make sure comedians can continue to punch up instead of punch down? Walter?
I think right now what we need is kind of how, like, they tried to get it back in the day. We need, like, some kind of agency or some kind of like a comedian owned what's the word I'm looking for?
A union or something?
We need somebody that could speak for it. Say that again.
I don't know. A union or?
Yeah, a union. That's what we need. Some kind of union or something like that that can speak for entertainers and that can have some sort of help and resources. Just like in the case of Jimmy Fallon, something happened to him. We have some resources to be able to fight back against these different
Jimmy Kimmel,
entities that have certain agendas, you know? So
sure.
I think that'd be the best thing right now for the future.
All right. Victor, I'll let you have the last word here.
All right. Well, I nominate Walter for the first president of comedians. no, I think he's right. I think, also in the comedy world, there's always a barrier between being a club comic and being, you know, which are like the upper echelons, the comedy stores, the improvs, all these big things. And a lot of us comedians are very good but don't get a chance to perform in front of those audiences. And because of that, there is a segregation even amongst comedians just because we don't roll in the same circles. Like I said, I've known of Walter for a long time. I've been trying to get him on a show. We just haven't had a moment to book him. Yeah, I think it's absolutely – absolutely important that we find some sort of way to align as comedians. And that's right and left, because we all have to have principles and stand by what we stand by. Most people would say, you know, Jon Stewart was a Democrat and he was a leftist, right? But he went super hard at Clinton. He went super hard at Obama.
All right. Hey, well, you all stay doing the good work. I've been speaking with local comedians Walter Ford and Victor Paz. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you as well. Have a blessed day. Talk to you soon.
You too.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us today. If you missed anything, you can download KPBS Midday Edition on all podcast apps. Don't forget to watch Evening Edition tonight at 5 for in-depth reporting on San Diego issues. Also, you can always share your feedback or segment ideas at midday@kpbs.org, or you can give us a call. The number is 619-452-0228. I'm Jade Hindman. We'll talk again tomorrow. Until then, make it a great day on purpose, everyone.
I'm Dr. Rachel Jans, Associate Curator of Modern and Contemporary Art at the San Diego Museum of Art. We're presenting a landmark exhibition of Eduardo Chiita, a visionary sculptor who transformed the way we think about form, space, and material. Eduardo Chiita, Convergence, is the most expansive U.S. presentation of the artist's work in nearly 50 years, bringing together monumental sculptures, delicate works on paper, and a virtual reality experience of his iconic Comb of the Wind installation on the Basque coast of Spain. Eduardo Chiita Convergence is on view now through February 8, 2026 at the San Diego Museum of Art in Balboa Park. Learn more at sdmaart.org.